I'm so glad trouble don't last always. The African American spiritual and the struggle for a new classical concert tradition. From National Public Radio and the Smithsonian Institution, I'm Bernice Johnson Regan, and this is Wade in the Water.
Wade in the water, wade in the water, wade in.
The success of the Fisk Jubilee Singers during the latter part of the 19th century opened the concert stage to African American singers and the African American spiritual. Though popular, these sacred songs were not always accepted as serious concert music. As the 20th century dawned, more and more African Americans trained as composers, directors, and performers in the Euroclassical music tradition began to redress the status of the spiritual by performing it as classical music. This program features some of the work of African American singers who took the spirituals with them as they made their way onto the world's concert stages. Roland Hayes led the way.
I'm so glad trouble don't last always. I'm so glad trouble don't last always. I'm so glad trouble don't last always. Oh, my Lord, oh, my Lord, what shall I do?
My father was Roland Hayes, who was a world-renowned concert tenor. He was the first to bring serious African-American music to the concert stage.
Make more room, Lord, in my heart for thee. Make more room, Lord, in my heart for thee. Make more room, Lord, in my heart for thee. Oh, my Lord, oh, my Lord, what shall I do?
Unfortunately, the music of my people was considered something light and off the wall. And my father, he showed the public how beautiful our music really is.
I'm so glad trouble don't last always. I'm so glad trouble don't. Glad trouble don't last always. Oh, my Lord, oh, my Lord, what shall I do?
I'm so glad trouble don't last always. This song was arranged by R. Nathaniel Dead in 1919 and was recorded by pioneering concert artist Roland Hayes in concert in 1955 with Reginald Boardman on piano. Roland Hayes broke the color line in Western classical concert music with his programming of the spiritual. While doing the research for this program, every concert singer I interviewed spoke of Mr. Hayes as father and a person revered for the integrity of the journey he pioneered.
He used to come to the Union Baptist Church, of which my family were members and I included, to give what Reverend Parks used to call the star concert of the year.
Marian Anderson.
And Roland Hayes had appeared there several times before anybody had the courage to ask him if I could appear on the program with him. At that time, I was a member of the junior choir and the senior choir. I joined the senior choir when I was 13. So Roland Hayes had been there often enough to, I suppose, say yes. I know that I was frightened because, to me, he represented the nth degree of everything that was wonderful and what I would hope to be sometime.
I am Afrika Hayes Lamb, daughter of Roland Hayes. Every song that he sings, he tells a story. You can see it. When people were fortunate enough to see him when he was alive, you could see it in his face or in his hands. But even on a plain, cold recording, you can hear it. It has to do with the warmth.
Round about the mountain, round about the mountain, my God's a-rolling, and she rises in his arm. Round about the mountain, round about the mountain, my God's a-rolling, and she rises. I went down in the valley, I prayed till I come through. You hypocrite, you concubine, you place amongst the swine. You go to God with lips and tongue, but you leave your heart behind. The Lord loves the sinner.
About the Mountain was among those songs that Hayes himself arranged and brought into concert performance. This recording was done in the mid-1950s, again with Reginald Bortman on piano. Roland Hayes was born in 1887. He was determined to get an education and enrolled in Fisk University in 1905. In 1911, he became lead tenor in the Fisk Jubilee Quartet. Leaving the Fisk Jubilee Quartet after their 1911 tour, Hayes stayed in Boston. In that city, he studied and performed European classical music. He left Boston and moved to Europe for further study in 1920 and began to make an international name for himself in England and France. Afrika Hayes Lamb.
He braved the color barrier and went to Berlin, where he was hissed at before he even opened his mouth, because the newspapers had printed an article before he arrived, said something to the effect, "How dare this black man come and desecrate our music?" So when he stepped out on the stage, this wave upon wave of hissing started.
And he changed his program around and began with Du bist die Ruhe of Schubert. The song was finished, they were on their feet cheering because they just didn't think this could be done. And their method of approval was to pound the floor with their sticks. And all you could hear was the thundering of canes on the floor.
This was 1923. News of Hayes' success traveled. And when he returned to the U.S. later that year, he became a major success on the American classical concert stage. For more than 50 years, he performed concerts throughout the country. The African-American spirituals he arranged came from his mother and grandmother in Georgia. Hayes always had a place in his heart and his concerts for these sacred songs.
Little boy, how old are you? Little boy, how old are you? Say, little boy, how old are you? Sir, I'm only 12 years old. This little boy had to remember that he was born the 25th of December. Lawyers and doctors were amazed and had to give the little boy praise. A little boy, how old are you? Little boy, how old are you? Say, little boy, how old are you? Sir, I'm only 12 years old. Lawyers and doctors stood and wondered as though they had been struck by thunder. Then they decided while they wondered that all mankind must come under. Little boy, how old are you? Little boy, how old are you? Say, little boy, how old are you? Sir, I'm only 12 years old. This little boy had the key to the hidden mysteries. The lawyers decided, as wise as he, we better let that little boy be. A little boy, how old are you? Little boy, how old are you? Say, little boy, how old are you? Sir, I'm only 12 years old. The last time the little boy was seen, he was standing on Mount Olivet Green. When he dispersed all the crowd, he entered up into a cloud. Little boy, how old? boy, how old do you say, little boy, how old are you? Sir, I'm only 12 years old.
In Little Boy, one of the special songs from his childhood, Roland Hayes becomes a sensitive singer-storyteller. This is one of his signature songs, recorded during the 50s with Reginald Boardman on piano. Hayes was soon in rich company as other African Americans joined him on the concert stage.
We have a great tradition in Negro life. All of us, Marian Anderson, Hayes, we all began in Negro churches.
Paul Robeson, 1958.
And my brother is pastor of a very large church in New York. And every Sunday afternoon, you may go there and hear any of the top Negro artists in the whole concert field, Warfield, anybody. We always go back to the churches.
Paul Robeson was a man of immense talent, whose contributions as an artist and human being made him a cultural force in this century. His bass voice moved millions as he began to perform the spirituals in concert during the 1920s. Here he performs Harry T. Burleigh's arrangement of There Is a Balm in Gilead. He's accompanied on piano by Alan Booth.
Sometimes I feel discouraged and think my work's in vain, and then the Holy Spirit revives my soul again. There is a balm in Gilead to make a wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin-sick soul. If you can preach like Peter, if you can pray like Paul, go home and tell your neighbor, he died to save us all. There is a balm in Gilead to make the wounded whole. There is a balm in Gilead to heal the sin.
Paul Robeson was born at the end of the 19th century, 1898, in Princeton, New Jersey. His father was a minister. Robeson was an honor student in high school and college and a star athlete. He finished law school in New York City, and finding the field literally closed to members of his race, he began to move into the performing arts. Robeson had a powerful stage presence and a natural ability as an actor. As a singer, Robeson was concerned with the spiritual as the vocal legacy of his people.
For a period of 5 years, from 1925 to 1930, he sang only the songs of slaves.
History professor Sterling Stuckey.
Because he felt there had been greatness in that slave community. There were geniuses, there was genius in that slave community. And that greatness and genius had produced this music. So for a period of 5 years, this was the music that he sang almost exclusively with a view toward helping black people have a better sense of their importance as a people. One of his favorite songs was a song called "I Got a Home in That Rock." In fact, the title of that song, "Got a Home in That Rock," is the title of the opening chapter of Robeson's book, Here I Stand, that rock being the church.
I got a home in that rock, don't you see? I got a home in that rock, don't you see? Between earth and sky, thought I heard my Savior cry. You got a home in that rock, don't you see? Poor man Lazarus, poor as I, don't you see? Poor man Lazarus, poor as I, don't you see? Poor man Lazarus, poor as I, when he died he found a home on high. He had a home in that rock, don't you see? Rich man Dives lived so well, don't you see? Rich man Dives lived so well, don't you see? Rich man Dives lived so well, when he died he found a home in hell. He had no home in that rock, don't you see? God gave Noah the rainbow sign, don't you see? God gave Noah the rainbow sign, don't you see? God gave Noah the rainbow sign, no more water but fire next time. You better get a home in that rock, don't you see?
I Got a Home in That Rock, performed by Paul Robeson in 1945, arranged and accompanied on piano by his longtime associate and friend Lawrence Brown. Robeson's work in theater and film and as a concert singer made him an international star in the 1930s and 40s. He became an ambassador for the human community and expanded his repertoire, singing songs in more than 20 languages. Paul Robeson.
I have never separated my work as an artist from my work as a human being. I've always put it even more strongly that, to me, my art is always a weapon. It's got to be good art. Othello was a weapon in racial relations, or at least showing that we can do some things too. I played football. My father explained to me that, well, if a fella hit me, I couldn't hit him back because they'd say we were bad and savage. So I had to stand and be knocked all around. I had to do well in my studies. So I've never been able to divorce one thing from the other. And luckily, I don't sing the kind of songs that you're here and you hit the high, whatever it is, the high B flat and the high this and the high that. I sing songs that express very much the emotions of different peoples, like the Welsh, the Scotch, the Negro.
But I keeps laughing instead of crying. I must keep fighting until I'm dying. And old man River, he'll just keep rolling.
Recorded live in 1952 in Chicago, performed by Paul Robeson, accompanied by Lawrence Brown on piano. Robeson rewrote the lyrics at the end of this song in keeping with his commitment as a fighter for justice. At the same time that Robeson was making an impact, another African-American singer, Marian Anderson, rose to prominence. After a 1935 concert in Austria, the famous conductor Arturo Toscanini said to Anderson, "Yours is a voice one hears once in 100 years." Plaisir d'Amour by Marian Anderson, recorded in London in 1930. Anderson was born in 1897 in South Philadelphia. Her musical talent was recognized early, and like Roland Hayes, she sought professional training. But because of prejudice against African Americans, she was rejected when she applied to a Philadelphia music school. Supported by family and the local black church community, she persisted, found a private teacher, and by the mid-1920s, she moved to Europe for additional study. Returning home in 1935, a major successful artist, she still had to deal with racism. In 1939, Howard University wanted to sponsor Marian Anderson in concert. Singer and then Howard University faculty member Todd Duncan talked with the university's concert series director about finding a place to hold the concert.
We did not have our nice big auditorium then, and there were only 800 seats in the chapel where the concert went. And he knew that there would be three times, four times that many there. So we had to make a decision. And he's told me that he didn't know where to. I said, well, get Constitution Hall. I said it in jest, but I meant it. And he says, oh, Todd, you know how they feel about that. I said, I don't care. She's an international artist. Just try. And he did. And you know what the end all was. They said no, she could not appear there.
Constitution Hall was owned by the Daughters of the American Revolution, the DAR, and they had a policy prohibiting African Americans from performing in their hall. When they rejected the Anderson concert, there was a tremendous outcry and condemnation, especially from the black community. The protest, centered in the nation's capital, drew in the White House. First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt resigned from the organization, and the Department of Interior got involved in locating a site in response to the public outcry against the DAR's decision. The solution was an outdoor concert at the Lincoln Memorial steps on the National Mall in Washington, D.C. Marian Anderson performed Easter Sunday, 1939, before a crowd of 75,000.
The concert that Sunday was such that if you've ever been tremendously excited about something or frightened, have you ever heard your heart beat heavily enough so that you almost lose your breath or that you can't hear much else that's in your ears? Well, this was the sort of thing that happened for me at the Lincoln Memorial. And it is something that has defied explanation, because there have not been any words that I have found in the English language which would quite express one's feelings at that time. The words are just not there.
It was a great occasion.
Singer Todd Duncan.
I was so proud to be an American and prouder still to be an American Negro.
Marian Anderson moved through these challenges with a quiet yet deeply centered dignity and strength that you could feel. Here, accompanied by Franz Rupp, she performs the Lawrence Brown arrangement of the spiritual, No Hiding Place.
no hiding place down there. There's no hiding place down there. Oh, I went to the rock to hide my face, to rock right out, no hiding place, no hiding place down there. Oh, the rock right I'm burning too. Oh, the rock right I'm burning too. Oh, the rock right out I'm burning too. I want to go to heaven as well as you. There's no hiding place down there. Oh, the sinner man, he gambled and fell. Oh, sinner man, he gambled and fell. Oh, the sinner man gambled, he gambled and fell, and he wanted to go to heaven, but he had to go to... There's no hiding place down there.
In time, Anderson wrote her own legacy. She became the first African-American singer to sing with the New York Metropolitan Opera. This is the same Met that had an unstated policy not to hire blacks.
I think that her greatest contribution, not just to an aspiring singer, but to the world, was dignity in the face of unbelievable adversity.
Soprano Jessie Norman.
The majesty of her is her legacy.
He's got the whole world in his hands, he's got the big round world. In his hands, he's got the wide world. In his hands, he's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the wind and the rain. In his hands, he's got the moon and the stars. In his hands, he's got the wind and the rain. In his hands, he's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the gambling man right. In his hands, he's got the lying man right. In his hands, he's got the crapshoot man. In his hands, he's got the whole world in his hands. He's got the little bits of baby. In his hands, he's got the little bits of baby. In his hands, he's got the little bits of baby. In his hands, he's got the whole world in his hands. He's got you and me, brother. In his hands, he's got you and me, sister. In his hands, he's got you and me, brother. In his hands, he's got the whole world in his hands. Oh, he's got everybody in his hands. Got everybody in his hands, he's got everybody here, right in his hands. He's got the whole world in his.
The beautiful voice of Marian Anderson performing the spiritual, He's Got the Whole World in His Hands, arranged by Hamilton Forrest, accompanied by Franz Rupp on piano. In addition to soloists who broke new ground as performing artists, several professional choirs entered the concert field. One unusual ensemble, which crossed categories and received national acclaim from classical and popular audiences, was a choir formed from a community church. The Wings Over Jordan Choir was organized during the 30s in Cleveland, Ohio, by Pastor Reverend Glenn Settles. Reverend Settles served as narrator during their live performances and the extremely popular radio broadcast, which began in 1937.
You will hear in Dr. Settles' introductions allusions to biblical scriptures.
Former Wings Over Jordan singer John Patton.
but also paraphrases from the black experience that black people could immediately identify with. And it was, for black people, a worship experience because it was preparation for the various worship experiences that they were going to experience at 11 o'clock because it came on about 9:30, which meant that if you walked in any black neighborhood, you heard the radios, they had Wings Over Jordan on.
Have mercy upon me, O Lord, for I am undone. I am wretched and most miserable. When night comes, I wish for day, and when the day breaks, I long for the night again. Unto thee and thee only I yield my aching heart. For in thy gracious mercy there must be a saving power for my troubled soul.
Cried and I cried, cried all night long, cried and I cried until I found the Lord.
My soul
just couldn't be contented.
My soul
just couldn't be contented.
My soul
just couldn't be contented until I found the Lord.
Cried, the theme song of the Wings Over Jordan Choir radio program. The feel of concert music within the country continued to expand for African Americans. One artist who created a stir during the early 50s in his New York debut was baritone William Warfield.
And instead of having Bach, Handel, Mozart in the beginning, as is the usual, and there's nothing wrong with this conventional, he had Songs of the Believer.
Vocal coach and arranger, Sylvia Ogden Lee.
He had an ancient Hebrew chant, a Monteverdi, early Gregorian something, and a spiritual by Mr. R. Nathaniel Dett there. First group, Songs of the Believer. Well, you should have heard your people say, why would he do something so unconventional? But they raved about this artist. He was made from that performance.
William Warfield performing Harry T. Burley's arrangement of Gospel Train, accompanied by John Arpin on piano.
The gospel train am a-coming, I hear it just at hand. I hear the car wheels rambling and rolling through the land. Then get on board, little children, get on board. Little children, get on board, little children. There's room for many or more. I hear the train a-coming, she's coming around the curve. She's loosening all her steam and brakes and straining every nerve. Then get on board, little children, get on board. Little children, get on board. Little children, there's room for many or more. The fare is cheap,
and all can go. The rich and poor are there. No second class aboard this train. No difference in the fare, then get on board. Little children, get on board. Little children, get on board. Little children, there's room for many or more.
In addition to singing spirituals and European classical repertoire, during the 1950s, Warfield also performed as Porgy in Gershwin's famous opera Porgy and Bess. He co-starred with soprano Leontine Price.
Yes, don't mind those women. You got your Porgy. You got your Porgy. I'm those women.
Both Warfield and Price inspired the next generation of classically trained African-American artists, including baritone Simon Estes. In 1984, with the Howard Roberts Chorale, Estes recorded the spiritual, "Every Time I Feel the Spirit."
Every time I feel the Spirit moving in my heart, I will pray.
Yes, every time I feel the Spirit
moving in my heart, I will pray.
Upon the mountain my Lord spoke, out of his mouth came fire and smoke. Down in the valley, upon my knees, I ask my Lord, have mercy please.
Every time I feel the Spirit moving in my heart, I will pray.
Yes, every time I feel the Spirit
moving in my heart, I will pray.
Jordan rivers, chilly and cold, chills the body, but not the soul. All around me looks so fine, till I ask my Lord if all was mine.
Every time I feel the Spirit moving in my heart, I will pray.
Yes, every time I feel the Spirit
moving in my heart, I will pray.
Ain't but one train on this track, run to heaven and straight back. All the angels standing round, that's why my soul is heaven bound.
Every time I feel the Spirit moving in my heart, I will pray. Yes, every time.
In 1990, Jesse Norman and Kathleen Battle presented an evening of spirituals at Carnegie Hall. They opened the concert with In That Great Getting Up Morning, with orchestra and chorus directed by James Levine. Jesse Norman.
Yes, well, we wanted to do a concert, and we wanted to do a concert with spirituals, and we sat about trying to figure out how to do this. And then sooner or later, we sort of worked out that we wanted to do it in a very different way with the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra and James Levine conducting, but that we would also do some with organ, that we would do some with sort of one or two instruments, that it would be on the stage of Carnegie Hall, which would, for me, be different than singing a spiritual in my church.
For this landmark concert, the artists wanted to look to the future. They invited several composers with strengths in contemporary idioms to create new arrangements for the traditional spirituals. Jesse Norman asked Evelyn Simpson Carrington to arrange Santa Please Don't Let This Harvest Pass, a song that took Norman back to revival days in her hometown of Augusta, Georgia.
And after I'd studied piano for 1 or 2 days, I was allowed to play the piano for the revival meeting. And so I've been there when the preacher has been up there, you know, with fire and brimstone and just sort of scaring you to death about not being a member of the church. And if you don't come now to Christ, goodness knows what's going to happen to your soul by 9:30. So that was the kind of thought, I suppose, that went into the spiritual, the creation of the spiritual center, Don't Let This Harvest Pass, because that's what it means, that you mustn't let the sun go down or let this gathering of souls for Christ stop before you've entered the church.
The feeling that I had is she wanted almost an African type of feeling in this piece.
Composer and arranger, Evelyn Simpson Carrington.
I thought the simplicity of the ostinata figure would probably be good to really bring, you know, the drama, because I knew that she would bring drama to it.
See now, please, don't let this harvest pass. See now, please don't let this harvest pass. See now, please don't let this harvest pass and die and lose your soul.
My God!
Santa, please don't let this harvest pass. Performed by Jesse Norman. Today, it is still a very difficult thing to achieve success as a classical music artist in the United States of America. And for minority artists, it is especially difficult and challenging. Soprano Florence Quivar.
We can't compare what Miss Anderson and what Leontine, Miss Price, and what Miss Bunbury, what Martine and all of them went to now, because there certainly have been advances. But are we where we should be? No, we're not. Unfortunately for us, because we are a minority, I can only speak for us, but in any minority, we have to be doubly prepared. And that's the greatest asset. And it's not fair, but I like the fact that we come with a strong understanding of who we are as Black people.
In 1989, Florence Quivar recorded a collection of her favorite spirituals, one of which was Howard Roberts' arrangement of In Bright Mansions Above. It was adapted by Leonard DePaul for the performance with the Harlem Boys Choir. Quivar was touched by the beauty and simplicity of this sacred song.
In Bright Mansions Above, Lord, I just want to go. Can you imagine what these people were going through? Slavery in the cotton fields, working in that intense heat and with no choice. Yes, you would have to sing something as simple as, oh, Lord, yeah, there is hope for me that, you know, this will soon be over. And that's how simple it is. You know, it's not a matter of just getting technical about it. Well, did it mean this? No, it was just that simple. It's a child's faith.
In bright mansions above.
so glad trouble don't last always. The African American Spiritual and the Struggle for a New Classical Concert Tradition. This program is a part of the Wade in the Water series produced by National Public Radio and the Smithsonian Institution. The senior producer is Judy Moilata. Associate producer Sonia Williams. The technical director is Renee Pringle with additional engineering by Charles Thompson. Production staff, Beverly Oliver, Joseph Gill, Dakia Simmons, and Tawan Mercer. We extend special thanks to Ev Grimes, the Pacifica Archives, and the Library of Congress Archives, and NPR member station WGBH. The executive producer is Sandra Ratley. I'm conceptual producer Bernice Johnson Regan.
Make more room, Lord, in my heart for thee. Make more room, Lord, in my heart for thee. Make more room, Lord, in my heart for thee. Oh, my Lord, oh, my Lord, what shall I do?
Major funding for Wade in the Water, African American Sacred Music Traditions, was provided by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities. Additional support was provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and the Catholic Communication Campaign, a parishioner-funded program that gets the good news around. This is NPR, National Public Radio.